everyone. Welcome to Creative Therapy Umbrella, the podcast, a place where creative arts and expressive therapies are discussed through interviews and questions from listeners. We will talk about the ups and downs of therapy life, the balance of creativity, intervention ideas, and issues within the profession. Take a listen and be creative. If you're enjoying the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and review us on iTunes. You can also follow us on Instagram at Creative Therapy Umbrella to send in your questions for the podcast. I'm really excited to get this episode out there to everybody today. This is a special release because this episode is an interview with Trisha Kayati, who is the host of Music Therapy Chronicles. And Trisha also interviewed me, so we decided to release these episodes at the same time. So once you're finished listening to my interview with Trisha, head on over to Music Therapy Chronicles and you can listen to Trisha interview me. We had so much fun together. It was just a blast. In our episode, Trisha talks about her experiences as a traveling music therapist. She shares amazing intervention ideas using dice, passing instruments, scarves, and lots of turn-taking experiences. Also, one of my favorite parts is when she dives into talking about her passion project, which is her podcast. So stick around, take a listen, and enjoy the episode.
Okay. Welcome to the podcast, Trisha.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I've been so excited about this interview because I've been binge listening to your podcast, listening to some of them several times. And I'm just really excited to interview you, the behind the scenes kind of piece of it, and get some of that stuff.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you're enjoying my podcast, getting some value out of it. And I hope other people listening, if you found whichever one you found first or whatever, you're getting something out of the other one as well.
Yes. Yeah. The Music Therapy Chronicles, it's been fantastic. I just saw that you posted one, I think, today. I was like, awesome. My drive to work. I know what I'm listening to.
That's the goal. I try and send them early on Wednesday morning so that they're ready for people's commutes.
That's a great idea. I love that. I feel like commuting, that I've gotten into podcasts only because I'm a commuting music therapist. So that's why I'm totally obsessed with them. They fill that time really nicely. Somebody actually on Instagram, it might have been Music Therapy Ed, or somebody had asked like a great way for self-care or like learning interventions. And I was like, podcasts, like that time in the car, you can, it's just like unutilized time that can be really frustrating. And I feel like your podcasts are just such a great way to like get some of that stuff in. It's really nice.
Thank you. That was completely my goal because I also drive all day, every day.
The sciatica pain. We all have that random stuff, the driving, the ocean drum that lies flat and then it rolls and you're like, no, I have 40 minutes to drive. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. I used to have, actually, I still have it. I have a keyboard in my trunk and I don't know how it happens. I try to make sure it doesn't, but sometimes it gets turned on and then I'll just hear like, din, 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 and I'm like, what is behind me? I don't have music playing. What's going on? And then I'm like, keyboard, keyboard.
My pet peeve is the tambourine. Oh. I don't know, something about like, it jingles so subtly that it's just in the background and it's just enough to annoy you. And
yeah.
You know, you don't want to be reaching around behind you while you're driving to move it.
But. Yep. And I would imagine that would be slightly creepy. Like, ooh, there's this jingly tambourine kind of, I don't know, it reminds me of Halloween for some reason.
There's actually a ghost in my car. My exactly. Mobile office has a ghost.
Yes. Gives it character, you know? All right. Well, let's dig in. Trisha, tell us about you. And you could start anywhere that feels comfortable about, you know, how you got into music therapy, who you are outside of music therapy, your specialty, anything you want to roll with. We'd love to hear it.
Well, I don't know if this will be an unpopular opinion, but I wouldn't say I have a specialty. In my whole life, I'm kind of a jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
So I never totally clicked 100% with any population in college. And after that too, I'm currently doing contract work and you kind of just go where the money is, right? So I'm done mental health. I've done school clients, adults with complex needs. I've had different geriatric populations. So it's I find it invigorating to change, have a change of pace all the time, but it's also tiring in the point that if you can't focus on creating interventions for one population that will go across the board necessarily. So every week is kind of like, well, which one am I going to focus on this week? Which interventions am I going to develop for which population? And then rotating that through. So everyone's getting new stuff and I'm growing as a music therapist, but it is a more difficult. Whereas if I had all one population, things would be a little more interchangeable.
That's awesome to hear. I think that I feel like I really relate to that because I did, my first job was similar and that I did a lot of different stuff. But I feel like it really prepared me really well to, like, you're on your toes. You kind of feel comfortable in a lot of different places. The one thing I'm curious about for you, because I know I struggled with this, was, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, was how do you balance that, like, okay, I need interventions for kids. I need interventions for adults. I need to be really animated with kids, and then I need to bring it down for something else. How do you balance all of that?
Yeah, I'm a firm believer, and I remind myself this all the time, that balance is an act. It's a balancing act, right? It's something you're constantly doing. There's not really a point where for a prolonged period of time, you'll say, I'm in balance. Everything is balanced. You're always trying, you're feeding into one thing, then you're coming back and you're feeding into another. So in my head, I sometimes want to be type A and say, oh, for, you know, first week of the month, I'm going to do my autism clients. And then the next week of the month, I'm going to do my geriatric clients. And the next week, I'm going to do mental health, so that everyone's getting even distribution for my own time. But in reality, it's kind of just whatever comes in the moment. If one of my groups, I'm not challenging them anymore, they need some more support, they need something new from me, then I'd spend the time to focus on them. And then they're being challenged for a period of time and I can focus on someone else, or a different clientele, different population. And I do my best to make interventions that feed into each other, but there isn't a ton of overlap.
Yes. It's hard to get that sweet spot. Yeah, it is. I love what you said about balance being an act. That's like, I feel like that's a quotable thing to just, every music therapist should have. Balance is an act. It's not a constant, but that's amazing. And I feel like that, I think that mindset really speaks a lot and can kind of settle a lot when you're doing something like that, where you've got your toes in a lot of different pools.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, I have to remind myself all the time that when I'm overwhelmed, just say, as long as you're doing your best.
Yes.
As long as you're trying, that's mm-hmm. all you can do.
Yes. We have to be that voice of reason for ourselves. Totally. So how did you get into music therapy?
I ask this question on my podcast.
Yeah. And
I feel like my answer is, again, maybe an unpopular opinion. My journey into music therapy, I kind of felt like, I'm going to use this metaphor. I was at a bus station, say, and someone said, you know, you should really go to New Orleans. And I just said, okay, that's a good idea, and got on the bus. I didn't have any idea what I was getting into. It turned out I was a swimmer in high school, wanted to continue swimming in college. I'm in New England. The schools near me didn't offer both. Someone mentioned music therapy and I remember thinking, oh, that kind of sounds like a good idea. And the next thing I know, I was enrolled in a school with a music therapy program and I had no idea how I got there, but I remember observing my first session.
Yes.
We had a clinic on campus. It was the two-way mirror, one-way mirror. And I was watching and it was another student with her client who was a young girl with different developmental delays and also a lot of anxiety. And they started the session with just this relaxation and then they progressed into a singing intervention, and just watching this little girl come alive was amazing. And I thought, this is exactly what I need to be doing with my life. And then I proceeded to never pick a population that was exactly what I wanted to do, you know, still figuring my way through it all. But
yeah.
Yeah. I have no idea how I got here, but I'm here and I love it. So that's what matters.
That's amazing. I love that story. That's so great. Actually, one of my questions that I like to ask is, when you were finding music therapy, what was your like, I'm sold moment where you saw something, you heard something, you read something, and you were like, this is for me. Would you say that that observation was that for you?
Totally. And obviously we have lots of other moments like that every day. Hopefully every day you have at least one.
Yes.
But yeah, that was it. That was the first time, you know, you have to see it to believe it. And now there's more resources online. There's some YouTube videos. There's other ways to find that. But seeing it in person was so impactful.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like those moments are those earth shattering moments that even if you find your, however we all find ourselves getting towards this path or starting to walk on it, that it's really cool to hear everybody's like earth shaking moment where it's like, whoa, this is amazing. This is what I want to do. Or I've never heard of this before. How did I not hear about this? And that's amazing. So let's hear a little bit about you outside of music therapy. What are your hobbies? What keeps you balanced when you've had like a rough work week? Love to hear some of that stuff.
So I'm a big self-care advocate, and I do lots of stuff that's free, in all honesty. You know, I can take my yoga mat anywhere. I can go for a walk anytime. I live in a beautiful state where I can be outside. But some of my favorite things are meditation. And that can be as simple as stepping out of a session, taking a deep breath before I take another step toward the next room. Or it could be sitting down for an hour with a guided meditation in my ears, whatever I feel like I need at that time. And my other favorite is every day, it's about a mile from my driveway to the end of my street. And I designate that time to just verbally or mentally go over things I'm grateful for. And if it takes longer than that, then it could be my whole drive. If it's a day where I'm having a rough one, I say, well, at least for this time, I need to go over all the things I'm grateful for and put myself in that positive headspace so that when I get to my session, I'm not ruminating on what happened that morning or the day before, or what might come the next day. I'm grateful for the moments I have with my clients and to be there making a difference.
That's awesome. That sounds like such a great boundary. Like it's like a consistent way to keep personal life and professional life separate, but it's also you're implementing a really great self-care strategy while doing it. I love that. It's such a like really nice boundary to start your day of like, okay, I'm moving from A to B, and this is kind of my routine of separating them.
Thank you. Yeah. My other, we were talking about this off recording, but I have an elderly dog and I just love sharing her story. So I'm going to take this opportunity to do
yes.
that.
And this is your fun fact, right?
This is my fun fact. Yes.
Fun fact. Right? Let's hear it. Yes. No, I love it.
So my dog's name is Piper. I was volunteering at a shelter during my internship because the only people I was interacting with were the people who worked. I was at a state hospital. The only people I was interacting with were the patients at the state hospital and the staff at the state hospital. So I needed some other interaction in my life.
Yes.
So I started volunteering at this shelter. I was there a couple times a week. I did all the fun things like playing with the cats and dogs and all the not so fun things like scooping poop and cleaning dishes. But this elderly dog got dropped off at the age of 13. And she is, spoiler alert, she's my dog now. She is the biggest love. You'd open her kennel and she would come out and hug you around the waist and not let you go. If you got, you know, you finally got her to go for a walk and you would be inches away from the door to go back into the shelter and she would know and she would hug you in the middle of the trail. Like, I just want to be touched. I just want to be loved. I just want to be with people. And I watched her get adopted 2 times and brought back 2 times for no fault of her own. And so I, you know, this poor elderly dog has had 3 homes and she was there for a year. And I just said, this is ridiculous. Yes. So I adopted her myself, and she's going to be 15 in a couple months. She hikes mountains with me. She goes kayaking with me. She walks with me every day, twice a day, no matter what the weather. And the neighbors, you know, it'll be 15 degrees outside and the neighbors will say, "What the heck are you doing?" And I always say, as long as she can walk and as long as she wants to walk, we're going to walk.
Yes.
So she just brings me so much joy. She always wants to cuddle.
Oh my gosh.
She's a huge part of my self-care too, is the making time to make sure her golden years are fulfilled. And that makes me slow down to spend time with her as well.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That brought tears to my eyes. I love a good dog rescue story. I have a rescue also. And I think there is, especially with dogs, like the elderly, there are so many elderly dogs that are dropped off and it's like, why, you know, and you just want to, I have a hard time not just wanting to scoop them all up and take them all home, but I can only, I guess, go with one, but that's awesome. And what a great, like, I don't think I ever realized this either until my dog's just one. And the self-care, that it's like a cycle that you have, I think, with pets sometimes, where you're, you know, I don't want to get up at 5:30 to go get you for a walk. But once I start walking, I feel so great. And then I'm up and I enjoy my day. And they really, I think, pour back into us a lot. And sometimes we don't realize that reciprocal relationship. But I think it's so true.
Totally. And you took the words out of my mouth because they like routine. So there's the day I want to sleep in, and she doesn't get out of bed till I get out of bed, but you know, if
that's
there's
awesome.
Like, well, she has to go to the bathroom, so I have to get out of bed today.
Yeah. I can't have Lounge Town for like 4 hours relaxing in the bed.
Although she would take cuddles over anything. So
that's awesome. Oh my gosh. My dog is still in that, extreme energy state. So we do get lots of cuddles, but there it's more of the energy. I need to run around like crazy, but I think she'll be a good cuddler later too. Oh my gosh, I love that so much. Okay, so what an awesome fun fact. 15. I've never heard of a dog that's 15. That's so cool. So
yeah, awesome. People ask me all the time, is she actually that old? And I have to say, well, I recently adopted her, but her vaccination records go back to 05.
Oh my gosh.
So I have to assume she was born in late 04. So I have to assume that, she's actually that old.
Wow, that's fantastic. Go Piper. I love that. Okay. So let's dig into, I really love hearing about, and you told us one already, and this was kind of your jumping off into music therapy, that moment that really got you on the path. But I'd love to hear about a recent moment, or if there's just one of those really, I think a lot of times we get those really big, big moments that happen in music therapy that give you the chills. I'm getting them just thinking about it. They really kind of just, they fill you up, but you know what you're doing, you know, is where you're meant to be. You can see that progress, like just one of those really big moments. I'd love to hear one of yours.
I guess I gave my big one, but my favorite moments, I'll give a specific example. I was doing this group. Again, I do contract work, so things are different every day, every month. But this particular group was not through any sort of day program or agency. It was just clients that were interested, showing interest in music therapy, asked the agency I work for. So we kind of compiled them and started this group at a local church. And over time, they dwindled and dwindled until there was just one left. And she, non-ambulatory, non-verbal, she would come into the session, and every week one of the ways she showed that she was excited was she would kick her shoes off. So she would come into the room and she'd kick her shoes off, and we were able to sustain the funding in such a way that I could give her one-to-one sessions for about a month and a half. And being able to focus on her, I just loved watching her light up, watching her laugh, watching her tactile stimulation with scarves and the kibasa. She loved that. She loved singing her favorite songs, and being able to spend the time just focusing on her was so rewarding. And she got so much more out of it, and I got so much more out of it than if it had kind of been that mix and match group where I was trying to meet all these different needs and do these different things. And it's making the clients laugh is my favorite thing. My favorite thing all the time is just, if any vocalization is great, but sometimes they just get that belly laugh and it brings the biggest smile to my face too.
Yes. I just had one yesterday, a first belly laugh from a client, and it was like, oh my, like I was crying at the piano because it was so fantastic. Those are like those belly laughs. There's nothing like a good belly laugh from a client.
Yeah. I that first one, like you said, sometimes the first time it happens, you're just like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
But I need to track this. This is a thing. This is worth recording.
I want to kick off my shoes at that moment. Like, oh my gosh. I love that she kicks off her shoes in accept. That's so, so amazing. Yeah, that space between, I love that you've had so much experience with group and individual too, because of your diversified experience. I can really relate to what you said about, you know, a lot of times we have a group and sometimes that's because of finances. You can't see individuals. It's more cost effective. But what an amazing, kind of happenstance that you did get to have some of that individual time, because there's so many moments I feel like in group work where somebody really stands out and it's just like, oh man, I wish I could see them individually, but I know it can't happen. And how amazing that you were able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. And it was totally, she, out of all the people in the group, she was the one every week where I was like, you're getting the most out of this. And I wish I could just tailor the whole group to you. And then I was able to do that, basically.
So. Yes. Yeah, it worked out. Yeah. Ask and you shall receive, I guess. My goodness. I love that she kicks off her shoes. That's fantastic. Nuanced individual things that people do and kids do, clients do, those are just like some of my favorite things to hear of, like, those, I don't know, they're just so great. There's so many unique things that make an individual, you know, it makes them who they are. Kicking off your shoes. Okay, so the next thing I'd like to ask you about is a challenge. And this one, I feel like I like to explain why I ask it too. It's really to normalize our ups and downs, because I think music therapists are really positive people, which is great. But I think sometimes, especially if you're working alone, if you come out of like an internship with 5 other interns and then you go and you're doing contract work, or you're working on the road where you never see other music therapists, sometimes you don't hear about the downs and the challenges that we have and how, you know, to push through those, what kind of things are effective to help. So I'd love to hear about one of your challenges that you've had, that you're currently having, how you worked through it. What does that look like for you?
So just a quick one. My challenge right now is because school is starting soon, I'm trying to schedule everyone. And that is such a headache. Contact information. I'm available this time. The teacher says, no, we can't do that. And then we have to go to lunch. And it's just like, well, I have these 3 hours and I need to do 3 45-minute sessions in these 3 hours.
Yep. Oh, so, yes. Yeah. Oh, my scheduling monster is this time of year too. It is. I have a lot of kids and just when they're going back to school, it's like, oh, we need to change from 10 o'clock to after school. It's like, I have no after school time. So scheduling is the worst monster, I feel like, ever, for sure, especially back to school.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's every time. I just have to center myself and, you know, this is just a reoccurring thing and we're going to get through it. But as far as a clinical example, this one actually just came to mind. I am still working at this school for children with autism, and there are 6 groups. I was doing 2 of them. Another music therapist was doing the other 4. I had inherited the 2 from another local music therapist. Anyway, one of the groups every single week was just such a mess. I couldn't get them to focus. The classroom size was 10 to 15. The staff was not super engaged on their phones. The students were trying so hard to use the skills they were learning. So if someone was being loud, they would say something to the effect of, it's too loud, or whatever. They were trying to communicate with each other. They were lots of behavioral things that I was trying to set boundaries around. And if I set the boundary, then a tantrum would happen. And that tantrum would set off 3 or 4 other students in the classroom. And it's a 30-minute session and I'm 10 minutes in and 5 of them are screaming and one of them is throwing a chair. And And it was, it got to the point where I said, I don't, like, I am clearly doing something wrong. I had no idea what to do to remedy the problem. So I observed the other music therapist in this setting. I talked to the previous music therapist who had this class. I kind of leaned on the teachers as, you know, what do we do when these things happen? Please take the reins because you know the protocol, you have the expectations. I will just maintain the boundaries, whatever you tell me they are. And it turns out that that just happens to be the, quote, behavioral class in the school. So it's kind of just expected that these things will happen.
Baseline.
That, yeah, reinforcements will have to be called in, and that if we get through my session, then that's phenomenal, and everyone gets a star for the day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not to say that I do not contribute to what's going on. I need to walk in, and I need to either have my schedule, use the ISO principle, go over the session guidelines every single session, just so we all know, hey, we're going to be respectful of each other and we're going to be respectful of the instruments, and everything else that comes up is going to fall under those two. I just go back to that. Hey, are you being respectful to your friend right now? Are you, you know, do you need to be pulling their hair? Do you need to be playing the maraca in their face? Is that respectful? Do you need to be hitting the rhythm sticks on the floor? Is that respectful to the instruments? So having easy guidelines, as simple as I could get them, and still going over them all the time, and also accepting that some days are just gonna explode. Yeah. I can do the best I can.
And that sometimes it really is not you. It's just, there's so many other factors that happened before that are going to happen after, that it's like, you can only do what you can do in your space. And, but that's hard. That's hard to get through the, like, that reminds me of, like, I also enjoy meditation, and there's that piece of sitting with uncomfortableness of, like, okay, you know, like, this might be uncomfortable, but I feel like it's also a great way of us relating to a lot of the kids that we work with, is they have to sit in uncomfortableness a lot of, we ask them to do that a lot. So, you know, us doing the same thing in those types of sessions.
Yeah. And I also try and remind myself that behavior is communication.
Yep.
And in that session, in that 30 minutes, I don't always have time to figure out exactly what is being communicated. But instead of getting frustrated, documenting it, moving on, and anticipating it the next week, taking the time when I'm done with the group to say, what do we think sparked that? Should I ask the teacher a question? Does it seem like it was caused before I got there? Did it seem like it was caused by a peer? Just trying to keep that in mind, that instead of focusing on my own frustration, to focus on what they are trying to tell me.
Mm-hmm. Which is really hard. It's a hard perspective shift, I think, to move out of. I remember in my internship, I had several classrooms that were, what ended up happening, one of my supervisors said this to me, and it, like, changed my life, in that it helped me change that perspective, like you're talking about, where it's so inward about, like, oh my gosh, why am I not doing this right? What am I missing? Did I miss the trigger that got that kid set off? But that, like, sometimes walking into the room, sitting down and walking out is a success. Like, that is a success. Being in the room with five other people with music, that much sensory stimulation happening, that's a success. And it was such a, like, just shift of, like, oh, whoa, this is kind of like a meta, I guess, where you're kind of, like, step out of yourself and you're like, okay, yeah, this is that container. And sometimes just coming into the container and moving back out of it is a win for the day. And I feel like that's such a hard thing to keep in our minds sometimes, because it's so easy, you know, to get in that place where it's like, you're like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Or are they going to throw that at my face? You know?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Like we were saying earlier, this is another balancing act, balancing growing as a professional. You have to take some ownership for what is going on. You're the facilitator, and balancing that it's not all about you.
Yes. Yeah.
Sometimes it does not matter what you are doing. That
absolutely
that person, that client just needs to express. We're an expressive arts therapy, so where's a better way to do that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Express what they're feeling inside. So this, yeah, another
balance. And that it's like that unconditional positive regard of, you know, that Rogerian thing of, like, hey, you need to express something, and go ahead and express, as long as you're safe, express that, you know. Yeah. But I also loved how you're talking about the responsibility piece and how it's awesome. You know, you went and observed the other therapists and went back to the previous therapist to kind of see if there's other stuff. I feel like one of our biggest tools is reaching out to other music therapists in those moments.
Yeah. And being traveling, doing contract work, currently I do not have another sitting set. Let me try again. I do not have another setting where there's another music therapist doing some of the groups in the school. Mm-hmm. So that was a wonderful opportunity for me to reach out to someone. And there are other music therapists working for the agency I work for, but we don't see each other. Unless we make the time to communicate, do some peer supervision, just some peer support.
Yes.
That doesn't happen. We don't have a team meeting once a week or once a month, or I don't talk to the OT of my clients, even though I wish I could.
Yes. I struggled with that so much when being in schools of like you want to be in that like multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary setting. Mm-hmm. And there would be times where I'd like see one of the speech therapists walking down the hallway and I'd like run up to them and be like, I know we only have a minute, but I really need to check in about this person. And just like those moments are so few and far between when you're a traveling music therapist. And that can be so, so hard to get, like even behaviorally, finding out what is the protocol of this behavior. What do you do when someone starts to escalate and they throw a chair? Are you ignoring? Are you redirecting? Are you holding a space? You know, finding out that stuff can be really tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And in my internship at the state hospital, we had a team meeting every morning where we sat down with the unit staff and talked about the goals of the individuals listed for that day. And so going from that to where I currently am was very polarizing. I'm my own island. And for some people, I get an IEP because they're through a school. But even then, it's kind of like, I don't see the thing you're seeing. Or I had the phenomenal opportunity to co-lead a singular session with an OT last year.
Awesome.
And she was giving me tons of feedback and ideas and, you know, what she sees in a session and ways I can incorporate OT and all that good stuff. And then I started the session and she couldn't get a single intervention in because the client was so engaged with me that she couldn't do what she usually does. And after the session, she said, I have never seen him that actively engaged. I've never seen that much participation. I've never experienced XYZ. And so I'm saying, that's why I want to co-lead. I would like to have a session where I can be with you. I can be with the speech path, because if this is what engages him, I just want to be the conduit for that, because you are the specialist in what he really, really, really needs to be working on.
Yes. And like, oh, there's so many things. Like you said, I think too, being a jack of all trades, a lot of music therapists, we're supporting PT, OT, speech, emotional regulation, coping skills, behavioral modification. You know, the list goes on of all the things that we're supporting. That's why I like to call it an umbrella. We're supporting so many things under one thing. And like, I love your example of how the OT couldn't get anything in. That's such an amazing, story of silent advocacy, you know, where it's just like, yes, this is what this is. Let's see if we can, like, can we make this happen? Where if, you know, you get the ideas of exactly what OT is working on, you can just incorporate that and then imagine the progress that would come from that.
Exactly. In an ideal setting, there would be 10 of me doing that all day, every day.
Co-treating is serious. I absolutely love, I'm constantly advocating, and I luckily have convinced a bunch of speech therapists, like PT in my current job. I just get really like bold about it. I'm like, hey, listen, this works really great. Can we try it? You know? And then after that, it's usually the same thing where it's like, wow, I've never seen them walk 20 steps. They only do 15 for me, but they really wanted to come get your drum. And I was like, yeah, let's see if we can make this happen. And sometimes it's only 15 minutes, but I really tend to push a lot for that because it's just so effective.
Yeah. I think, again, I guess this is the running theme, balancing again, because sometimes I think I'll speak for myself. Sometimes I'm the type of person who can have a lot of pride. And I want all the answers and I want to know I'm doing all the things, but taking that step back and saying, no, like this is the specialist in this thing. So I really need to learn from them because they can't be here when I'm here and vice versa. So I need to incorporate what they're doing and use their expertise to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we want them to do the same thing. You know, if we can generalize any music stuff for them to take on and start using, like just spreading the love around, you know, like using it, getting the more generalized, I feel like the better that we can get the stuff that we do, because then it's happening in so many more environments. Let's do it. Let's jump into the intervention sharing piece. I'm excited about this. All right. So if you want to tell us about it first, however you want to start.
So I love doing interventions that involve passing things, passing anything, passing instruments, passing a dice, passing a scarf, passing a clap, passing a rumble on a drum. I love doing interventions with passing.
And yes,
because they are so adaptable, they're so engaging, they're dynamic. You're working on the social skills of, you need to be aware of the person next to you, and if it's a physical object, you need to look at them or look at the object and show them your hands. You're working on the motor skills of the receiving and the passing of whatever it is. You're working on the cognitive executive functioning of, it's coming around, it's getting closer, soon it's going to be my turn, and then I need to do what I need to do next is pass it along myself. You're working on turn taking, depending on what's going around and who's doing what. You're working on all of these different dynamic levels with something that seems so simple on the surface. You know, any teacher can see this. Oh, the class is getting rowdy. We're going to start passing a thing and singing a song. And suddenly people are more self-aware. They're more aware of others. They're all doing the same thing. I do try to do things where there's a goal. So, you know, we're all focusing on whatever the goal is. So I'll start with a dice. I have a big foam dice.
Yes.
Yeah. Have you done this before?
No, but this week at my website, musictherapyumbrella.org, is dice week. I have 3 separate interventions going up about using dice in sessions. And my one that's coming out on Friday is the foam dice. I love that thing.
Well, hopefully this isn't the same thing. But
it's not. No. I love it.
Well, we pass the dice and we'll sing either Take Me Out to the Ball Game, Hot Potato, if there's a seasonal song they want to do, so Frosty the Snowman. We, you know, wherever the song ends or the melodic phrase ends is where the music stops, and that person who has the dice gets to roll the dice. Mm-hmm. And then I have corresponding questions for each number. So depending on the group, that could be a this or that. It could be a yes or no. It could be an open-ended question. It could be whatever the group is working on in class. So they are learning about each other. I'm getting to learn about them. They have to not only discern that the dice is being passed and what to do, but what to do when the music's going and what to do when the music stops. Mm-hmm. They have to work together. Yeah, it's that's one of my favorite interventions to do. And it works with every population, I'm going to say, yeah. Just about, even my nonverbal clients I have on the iPad, and, you know, cat or dog, you click on the thing and they pick. So I love passing the dice.
That is fantastic. I'm just so beside myself that the dice has lined up this week. It's just exploding everywhere. I love the idea of corresponding different pieces to like the number on the dice. I have a foam dice that's like a dry erase one, so you can write in different things. But I love the simplicity of just having the number, and then that means if it's you're working on academic questions, or if it means like you're working on safety questions of, you know, community helpers. Like there's so many pieces I can imagine if you're in a school that you can just, then you answer that question. Or even if a kid's working on like those communication skills, like just hit your device to show us which one it is, you know, show us a community helper. And then they get to that page and can choose from 5 or something. That's such a cool idea. I love that.
Thanks. Yeah. I can't take credit for it. It's one of those things I saw in undergrad and was like, well, that's awesome. Yeah. Why don't I do that?
Yep. You got to hold on to, those are in our Mary Poppins bag of tools. Like you just keep it in there. I love that so much. So you said you would sing like Take Me Out to the Ball Game. what was the second song you said?
Hot Potato.
Hot Potato. Yes.
I really like that.
Yes, right? Oh my gosh, I love those.
Yeah, and then any seasonal song. So sometimes they'll say, like, let's sing a spring song.
Okay. Yep.
Give me an idea of a spring song. But yes, that's right. Like, we're working on, we're aware of what time of year it is. And the
yes. season,
and, you know, maybe they weather. Do a spring song in class. Yeah, the weather.
Rain. Yep. Yeah. I love having songs in my back pocket. I was just talking to somebody about this, of having, they're kind of like free-for-all songs, I guess. I always think of them as really general, where it's like something about the rain for spring. I have one that's called like Summertime Band for summer. That's just really simple. There's no directives. It repeats itself a lot so that you can focus on all of these other things happening in the session, and a kiddo is not really glued to the lyrics or the music. So you're keeping it really simple so that the focus can be on the executive functioning task, the communication task, and those other things. But yeah, those are, I feel like those are another thing to keep in that your Mary Poppins bag.
Yeah.
Yes. Sure. With turn taking too, you had said something about, what has been your experience with turn taking and like those kind of, your understanding of it, your development of that? I would love to hear a little bit more about that.
In general, I'd say my groups are pretty good at turn taking. Some of them, especially with the dice, they kind of hoard the dice. They're like, oh, the song is almost over. So if I hold the dice,
yes,
then I will get a turn.
Love that. That's it. I was imagining that happening. I was like, ooh, I hope we get to this.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually I sing the song, so I will wait. I will stop singing until they pass the dice.
Nice. That is a fantastic strategy. I love that. I love that it's musical. You know, you're at that strategy is just like, oh, you're going to wait. So am I.
Yes, exactly.
I'll meet you there.
Sometimes they're so aware that they will say, you know, oh, so-and-so hasn't had a turn yet. And there's three kids out of the whole class that haven't had a turn. So some of them follow, they know whose awesome. Turn it is next or who hasn't gotten a turn. And they'll sometimes even work together to make that happen.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've had lovely. Them even before, like throw the dice across the room. Like, oh, you haven't had a turn. Here you go.
Go get it.
Yeah, that's why it's a foam dice. Foam.
Yes, yes, it's very safe for throwing.
And I'm going to say that depending on your clientele, sometimes they try and bite the dice. So keep that in mind. If you have a certain person who is apt to do that, stay closer to them.
Yes, yes, to intercept that. And dice, anything that's fabric like that, it's like, once there's a mouth on it, it's over. You can't quite clean it until you wash it.
Yeah.
Oh, that can be hard.
Did that answer your question?
Sorry. It did. Yeah. It's really interesting because I feel like the like turn taking is so intricate. And I remember I worked in a therapeutic preschool and we were at like the really basics of turn taking, where like it's really cool to hear the more advanced side of like, hey, who hasn't had a turn yet? And it's just so multi-layered. And I feel like it's something that we miss a lot, or that can be misunderstood as like, oh, turn taking is just waiting your turn, waiting for the thing. But there's just like this skill strand of where turn taking starts and where it moves to. It was like, who hasn't had a turn is that higher level. And when I used to work on stuff with that lower level, it was like turn taking was just impossible. If you didn't have it, like the world was ending. So we used to do things where, like, if you had the foam dice, you'd pass it, but the next thing you got was something less preferred. So maybe it was like bean bags, you know, all like plain colored bean bags, and then the dice. But then you had something to kind of like hold while you were waiting and pass along, but it wasn't the most preferred item. But it was, I remember learning that and figuring that out and being like, wow, turn taking is so much more, there's so much more to it than just the basics of waiting your turn and passing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also like to do passing with instruments, right?
Yes. So
everyone, we can do one instrument passed around, but I like to do everyone has an instrument. Mm-hmm. And I usually start the session with letting the client choose their preferred instrument. Mm-hmm. So right off the bat, as soon as we pass, they're trying out a new instrument.
Yes.
And they might like that one. They might not. They might like it. Who knows? So I'll do either a song with the instructions of when to pass, mm-hmm. or depending on the group, which direction to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Or I will do Here Comes the Sun, pass the instruments to the left every time you hear Here Comes the Sun.
Yes.
More advanced, pass the instruments to the right every time you hear just the word sun.
Mm-hmm.
Or however, whatever song you want to pick, however advanced you want to get. And then I will give solo opportunities. So I will say, who wants a solo on their new instrument? So they're playing their new instrument, they might solo on it, they get a better feel for it, they get turn taking again, the class is watching that one person, we might clap for them, you know, they're encouraging each other. Mm-hmm. So that's another one of my favorite ways to pass things.
Yes. And that the opportunity for soloing, I feel like is such a just great self-esteem boost, you know, for the kids that want it. And sometimes I feel like even the kids that are a little bit more hesitant, you know, maybe it's just they're staying in your chair and everyone's quiet for 2 seconds and then we move on. And maybe we don't clap because it's just too much. But yeah, like that opportunity to be in a group and to have like your own voice be heard, even though your voice not, you know, you may not be able to literally use your voice, but you can be heard as an individual, is so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And again, since I have different instruments, do you know what a quack stick is?
Is that one of the wobble?
Yes. That's yep. One of my favorite for like the clients who don't necessarily like to verbally express themselves. I'm like, well, you get this one. So, you know, everyone is immediately jealous that they have
yes!
the quack stick, and then they get this kind of vocalization sounding instrument and they're probably going to laugh.
You're bringing humor into it too, which is so, I feel like so powerful for some of those kids who do tend to be more quiet, or, you know, that power of humor to make other people laugh is a really great tool to getting a kid coming out of their shell. Mm-hmm. The quack stick is, I would say like top of the line for funny sounding instruments.
Yeah. If you don't have one of those, I recommend it.
Yes. You know. Yeah. I'll put a link to those in the show notes.
Yeah, they're on West Music. I used to just always have it in my bag of instruments, mm-hmm. but every time I would reach in wherever I was, they would hear the quack stick and that's what I could focus on. So I was like, okay, now from now on the quack stick is just going to stay in my car unless I know I'm going to be using it.
Yeah.
It's distracting.
It's so loud, it just wants to be played. Yeah. There's another one, and now I can't remember the name of it, but it's a really funny looking instrument. Has a ball on one end, and then it has a metal piece, and then there's kind of like a triangular.
A vibraslap?
Yes, that's it.
That's my favorite instrument. I love the vibraslap.
That's another one that I feel like people, like kids, people, everybody, all ages are just like, whoa, what was that sound? How do you do that? And yeah, I love that so much.
Did you know the history of the vibraslap? It used to be made out of the jaw of a goat, and it was the teeth rattling that made the sound.
Oh my
gosh. A goat or
gosh.
A donkey? I don't exactly remember, but.
That was another amazing fun fact that I love so much. It's a little bit gross, but I also really, really like it. That's like goat nails. I don't know what it is with goats, but you know the goat nails instrument? Have you heard of that one? I'm not going to remember what it's called. It looks like little, it's kind of like a shaker, but it just has all these hanging kind of shells on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. And actually, we used to call it goat nails in my internship because if you get like the real ones, that's what they're made out of is goat nails. So I would always be like, oh, here's who wants the goat nails? Not a lot of people, but oh, so many goats. Oh, my goodness.
That's before we had all these synthetic instruments, which are also great because you can clean them. So
Very true. Oh, so many things that we need to clean. I love those interventions. That's so many ideas and so many cool things. I love how much we got on turn taking and sharing and how you shared all of the things that are happening in your session when you're doing something as simple as turn taking. You know,
can I share one more real quick?
Absolutely. Of course. Nope. Share away. This is my favorite thing.
So, scarves.
Yeah.
You do whatever you do, your movement with scarves. And this I actually observed from someone else, so I can't entirely take credit for it. But at the end, make a ball, make a ball, make a ball, ball, ball. And you squish your scarf into a ball and they always want to throw them up and put them on their heads. So you throw it high, throw it high, high. And then once they get the hang of that, throw to the left, or to the right. Or if it's a one-on-one staff with a client, throw to your partner so they're interacting with their staff in a positive way. So that's my last one for passing.
I love that so much. That I used to do that a long time ago, and I haven't done it in a really long time. And I love the ideas of passing it, because I used to do the thing where it came from a kid just wanting to throw it up. We would scrunch it up. And I think they were working on something fine motor. So we were really kind of working on that squishing movement. But then, of course, it was like, how can I not throw this? This is so exciting. But I love the idea of passing it to somebody or trying to throw in a certain direction or another direction. You can add so much more. Your intervention just can continue so much more with that.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. And I feel like sometimes scarves, I know I get stuck in like, okay, what else can I do with a scarf? Like, what else can we do? We waved it around, you know, we did some movements, but that's such a cool way to integrate some more social skills with that too as well. Love that.
Thanks. Yeah, that's one of my favorites. They love that. They love throwing the scarf up and they like try to catch it on their heads.
Yep. All right. So our last thing is your passion project. Something that you're really passionate about. I think outside of the music therapy session is where I really think of this. Sometimes it is clinically related. If it's social advocacy, diversity issues, if it's something promoting something for the field that you feel like is missing, what is your current passion project?
This might be expected, but my own podcast.
Yes.
Is a passion project.
I'm actually really glad that you said that, because I was like, let's dig in.
Thanks. So that was born out of the same thing as you, being in my car. You know, there's audiobooks, there's lots of other podcast content out there, but I wasn't finding anything that was getting me inspired for my sessions.
Yes.
And, you know, what do you do when you can't find something? You create it. And in the past year, so many music therapy podcasts have just popped out of nowhere, which is great. So I always say to anyone who hasn't read Elizabeth Gilbert's Big Magic, have you read that?
I have not.
It's a good book. She talks about ideas being these separate entities, and an idea will come to you, and if you don't act on it, then it will go to someone else. So this music therapy podcast idea must have just come visited all of us, but it's great. We all have a different spin on it.
Yes, and I feel like it is that thing of it's missing, you know, like it's also like a camaraderie thing where I feel like, wow, we all felt that there was something missing and that there needed to be more happening. Yeah.
And I think podcasts are going to be the new blog, in all honesty, at this rate. It's like all of a sudden everyone's popping up, which is great. Like, come on, start a podcast. You'll have your own idea and it will be great. And it will resonate with the people who need to hear what you have to say.
Yes.
But so my vision was to, like I say in my intro, it's like a music therapy conference you can listen to wherever you are, because the conferences only come twice a year if you have the opportunity to go to both. Many people don't. So you get that inspiration. I try and put out an episode weekly. I have a Facebook group for our podcast. So if people want to dig in more about the episodes, they can do that with other listeners. You know, some of the guests are in the Facebook group. They can ask them questions. Also just networking. So you listen to an episode and you hear someone you've never heard of doing a thing you're interested in. Their contact information is usually in the show notes. You can reach out to them. You can get more information. You can do peer supervision. You can start a project together. Like, whatever it is, just creating this sense of community is the bigger, much broader picture of what I want to do. I want it to be another platform for everyone to feel welcome, to share, to meet other people, to, if you're by yourself all day, every day, kind of like what I do, at least you have somewhere you can go for the support you're looking for.
Yes. And I think you may have mentioned this in one of your podcasts. I feel like it came up somehow. I feel like the accessibility of your podcast, of that, I love that it's like a little mini music therapy conference, because it really is. You feel I feel like at conference, that's when I feel most inspired. You know, you come back and you're like, yeah, I have all these ideas. I learned all these new strategies. I met these great people. And you're just like, you go on that. And then usually it's like, it wears off maybe a few months and you're like, oh, okay. And, but that's such a great way, to have that, that inspiration all the time. But I also feel like, you know, conference is expensive. And if you're in a, certain part of, the country, if wherever you are, it's not always accessible and, or financially reasonable for everybody. And, but that shouldn't hinder our opportunity to get inspired from other people. And I just love the way that your podcast has that, you know, it is like a little mini conference of hearing all these different people speak and talk about their ideas. And to get that, it's that little mini inspiration that you can get a couple times a week. And you don't have to spend $1,000 to travel there, take time off work and all this other stuff. And that can be really difficult every year at a couple times a year. Once every 3 years, it can still be difficult.
Yeah. And I'm really excited for your podcast to be able to get the same things without having to listen to my own voice.
To get some other stuff. Yes. Yeah.
I always feel energized. In all honesty, I always leave a recording and I feel so energized and ready to go. And then I'm like, I don't remember anything I just learned. It's all such a blur. And then I have to go back and listen to it. And I'm like, I don't want to listen to myself talk anymore. Like, I listen to myself all day in sessions. I listen to myself in the recordings because I have to make sure the audio is good. And then I'm listening to myself in the car again so I can actually learn what I already talked about.
Yes. Yes. And it is like, so I get so listening to like my own recordings, I'm like, it's hard to like switch off of like, oh, why did I say that? Rather than, you know, like, no, wait, what is the person saying? What? Oh, yeah, let's do that. Like, incorporate that into your work. It's hard to separate from that for sure.
Yeah.
But that's actually, yeah, with this podcast, it's another, that inspiration piece. Like, I want to be able to do that. And especially with interventions, because I feel like, I know that going to conference and going, there's a lot of times where there's those sessions that are like just interventions the whole time. And I was like, why, you know, podcasts are such a great way to do that, where you can hear it. You don't have to go and learn it as much. Like if you, like for me, sometimes just listening to a song 4 or 5 times in the car, I'm like, okay, I think I got it. I can try to incorporate this and see how it goes. And, having that opportunity to get that, internalize that information, especially we're all driving so much.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. And yeah. It's, you know, it's all right there. You don't have to buy a CD of interventions. It's just
yes.
There for you to go back to and look at and reference in 5 years when you forget. You're like, oh, there was a good thing. And I totally forget what it did, but it was a thing that I liked.
So. Yes. Yeah. I still do that with podcasts, like some of my favorite like Stuff You Should Know or something. I'm like, I know there was an episode about this random thing. I've got to go find it. Mm-hmm. Love that. What would you say for your passion project, which is your podcast, what has been the biggest challenge and what has been the most, benefiting thing for you that's come out of it?
The biggest challenge again is scheduling. I try, and like I said, I've been consistent with releasing an episode once a week, but that means at least once a week too, I need to have a recording. And, you know, I did a batch day last week, so I have a few ready for about a month, but reaching out to people, waiting to hear back. Sometimes people reach out to me and figuring out schedules that work. And I'm the type of person that if I'm given something with a deadline, I will get it done to the best of my ability as soon as possible and just have it ready for when the deadline comes. I like to get things done and out of the way. So yes. With a reoccurring project like this, that's not so much an option. So handling my own anxiety about what if I don't get an episode out for next week? Like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been the most difficult part, but it's still worth it. I'm still doing it because it's worth it. The most rewarding part is networking. Meeting people all over the country. I have my first international interview next month.
So that's going to be awesome.
Yeah. I just, like I said, I leave every recording feeling so energized. I usually do them in the afternoon and then I go walk my dog and I'm like giddy. oh my gosh, I have all this energy from what this person just said, and I can't wait to edit it and put it out into the universe and see what people have to say. And it's very fulfilling. And I've gotten some very touching reviews, awesome. Touching social media posts, touching emails for people who are impacted by even just one episode. That's all that matters. That's all it takes. And that's what I want.
Yes. Yeah. It's similar to our clinical work where it's like one small, it's all worth it for one small step forward.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. That's amazing. I love the idea of a batch day. I have not done that yet. How has that gone for you? Is that good? Is it hard?
Yeah. Drink lots of water. I hope, honestly, I've been drinking water. I hope it hasn't been going through my mic.
Nope.
You'll just have all these water bottle sounds. It's nice because I set up and break down my equipment every time I record. I live in a rather small space, and so I can't just leave everything ready to go. It's also nice because then I can coordinate with my partner for like, okay, this day I need quiet.
Yes.
Like, yes. This whole day, instead of, hey, this hour in the middle of the day, which is basically when you're coming home from work, I need you to be silent when you come home. And don't get the dog excited either. He'll
be loud. It's always the dog.
Who I love. I don't know if you can hear me snoring either.
Nope, not at all. I don't know if you can hear my dog chewing on the like other five things that she's been chewing on. All bones and stuff. Nothing bad yet, but yeah.
So yeah, batching is nice because you have it ready to go for several weeks. Mm-hmm. And you can spread out the editing and do that on your own time.
Yeah.
So I like it. As long as you can coordinate everyone's schedules to fit in, and time zones are always different. So.
Oh, time zones. But, yes, that is hard.
Yeah, I think it's worth making like, hey, this is my batch day. Are you available?
Yeah. I'm totally stealing that idea. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I think something that you said too of like and I can actually see it on your face of when you were saying how energized you feel after an interview and just like ready to go out and take on the world and share this with everybody. I think this is something for me that I feel like it just podcasts in general or diversifying what you do as a therapist. Sometimes if we get, and for some people it's great, but if you're doing your, 25 hours of contact time and then your admin time and that's your work. Some people really flourish in that, in that structure. But for me, I feel like I need something else to like kind of keep me going. And that's actually where this came from. I was like, I feel like I want to give back more and, network and connect and then kind of keep going. And I think as music therapists, sometimes we forget about the opportunities to do that of like those other, how can you diversify what you're doing? So you're not just doing clinical work and taking your notes, what other things can you do as a music therapist that could be really rejuvenating and part of that self-care for what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll say to anyone who's nervous about networking or approaching someone is that we're all just people.
Yes.
I just have a microphone. Like, it doesn't mean anything. When I first started mine, I think I had 3 people say like, you should interview Kat Fulton. Like,
oh yeah.
Like the ultimate interview. And so I emailed Kat and within 5 minutes she said, yes, let's set it up. So I was like,
oh my gosh,
everyone I've talked to is so lovely and so nice. Yes. And we're all doing awesome things and we're all just people. So just approach the person you want to talk to.
Yeah. And I feel like it's like, we all want to connect, it's like that person that you're like, oh, should I reach out to them? Like, yes, they probably just really want to connect to other people too. That's why, I think that's why we do our job. Really enjoy connecting with people for sure. And yeah.
And music therapists are a special breed. I haven't been an OT, but I can imagine that a similar type podcast, lots of people doing the thing. I'm not explaining this well, but it would be a different, it would be different. Kind of like how you've gone about the whole master's level entry thing. It's been very holistic and patient and our profession is very unique in that way.
Yeah. And I think our many hats kind of thing that we all do that, whether we're that generalist jack of all trades really helps us with taking in a lot of different perspectives and not just kind of honing in on one thing that we need to happen. I think that helps that a lot, is we're aware of a lot of things happening at once, which not only helps us clinically, but just as professionals and advocates, I think that really goes a long way too.
Totally.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Tricia, this has been absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. Anyone who is interested but nervous to be on the Music Therapy Umbrella, I recommend it, because I was super nervous to be on the side of the interview. And I was like, I'm going to have nothing to say. And it was easy. It was
awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. Before we end, is there anything you want to plug before we leave? Your Facebook group, all of that stuff. Let us know.
Yeah, so just check out Music Therapy Chronicles anywhere you find podcasts. Excuse me. Our social media handles are just Music Therapy Chronicles. You can find the Facebook page from there, the website. Leave us a review on iTunes. Leave Music Therapy Umbrella a review on iTunes. It helps it be more visible to more people looking for this kind of content.
Mm-hmm. If you like it, review it, subscribe. It's super helpful. Awesome. Okay, Tricia. Well, thank you again. It's been wonderful.
You too.
I hope you guys enjoyed the episode with Tricia. Don't forget to head on over to her episode at Music Therapy Chronicles and support her as well. She's got an amazing thing going on over there. If you're interested in getting a PDF of what was talked about today on the podcast, especially the intervention ideas, then head on over to creativetherapyumbrella.com and sign up for our newsletter. Also, don't forget, follow us on Instagram, subscribe, review us. We also have a Patreon page. Any way that you can support is amazing. And thanks so much for listening.